Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, September 21st, 2015. A South Sudanese journalist forms a new political party.
People have been disturbing me. Why don't you do something? Why don't you set up schools? Why don't you campaign for certain things? So finally, I find myself in the middle of these people, and I think I'm still strong enough to fight.
And members of the Western Equatorial Community in the diaspora appeal for help for survivors of last week's fuel tanker explosion.
They need immediate help and intensive treatment. And things like nutrition, good nutrition, things like medical supplies. Most of all, money to help other situations we need.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The former editor of the Citizen newspaper is forming a new political party less than 2 weeks after he quit journalism. Nyalbol, who was forced to shut down his paper by the government and reportedly received warnings and even death threats from government agents, has decided the way to change the political power in South Sudan is to form his own party. Philip Thornalew has more for VOA from Juba.
Bol says the decision to form Sawasawa, which means equality in Arabic, is not related to the shutdown of his newspaper by a government a month ago. He says the peace agreement signed by the leaders of the two warring parties last month to end 20 months of conflict inspire him to form a new party.
Sawasawa is a party for common people, and our objective is to take politics to the people so that people have to decide for themselves at the end of the day.
He says one of the objectives of Sawasawa is to allow citizens to decide what needs are important to them. Bol says he and his colleagues will determine those needs, present their policies including those needs, and then mobilize support. Bol says the current political system does not allow ordinary people to determine for themselves how to be governed and by whom. He says his party will change that.
It was in line with the peace talk. We have to come up with a party that have issues of people at heart. We need to change the life of South Sudanese from violence to peaceful arguments rather than using violence. We have suffered from many wars. One of our objectives is to motivate them to decide who they want.
He says the political parties forum, the body in charge of registering new political entities, has approved Sawasawa. He says the next thing to do is write a party constitution and then recruit members across the country. Bol says there are restrictions on political parties just as there are on media outlets, but he is ready for the challenge.
Life is always tough. There is no easy life. I was actually considering staying in the house, but also people have been disturbing me. Why don't you do something? Why don't you set up schools? Why don't you campaign for certain things? So finally, I find myself in the middle of these people, and I think I'm still strong enough to fight.
Bol says his party will provide bold, new alternative policies to those of the ruling party. One issue Sawasawa will take on, Bol says, is social injustice.
We are going to mobilize citizens to demand that the government must employ them. Because since we have oil mining, why are the people not benefiting from the oil mining? So we will actually defeat the elites that have been stealing the public mining. And we want even the issue of student loans, because education should be the top priority of South Sudan.
And Bol says his party will also offer to provide student loans for the needy, because education is key to the country's development. Bol says once things are in place, Sawasawa will make its official debut. There are nearly 20 political parties in the country. Most lawmakers are members of South Sudan ruling SPLM party. The second largest party, the SPLM-DC, has 6 MPs. For VOA News, I am Philip Donaleo in Juba.
Members of the Western Equatorial Diaspora in the United States say they are devastated by the news of the fuel tanker explosion that killed nearly 200 people in Mambé Payam last week. The executive director of the Western Equatorial Community Association, or WECA, Moses Gabriel Dangbaza, is asking for help for survivors of the blast. Dangbaza says many people who were badly burned when the tanker truck exploded in a ball of fire are in need of medical care, food, and shelter.
I would like just to extend my sincere condolence to all the families who lose their loved ones during this terrible accident that happened in Meridi. And my prayer and thoughts to those who are still in hospital. Since that accident happened, we, the Western Equatorial community in the diaspora, has been trying to coordinate a program in which we can work with the people on the ground to help the victims. And just last week, we coordinated a program with our Bishop of Meridi, Justin Badi, and we coordinate another program with the chairman of Meridi Community Association, Joseph Stanley Abrahama. We are going to work with them to deliver the service to the people on the ground.
And what are the conditions of the victims who were evacuated from Meridi to Juba Hospital? Do you know anything about their condition?
First, I would like just to thank those who take the initiatives to bring the critical patients to Juba Hospital. Even though we know the hospital itself in Juba have no capacity to handle that critical disasters, but it was very, very helpful to help in that situations. About their conditions, their life by God's grace, because of just what I mentioned, first, the capacity were not for the disaster, and second, we do not have medical personnel who were there ready for that kind of situation.
And you say you've been speaking with other people on the ground, like chairperson of the Meridi Association in Juba. You also mentioned that you spoke to the Anglican Bishop of Meridi Diocese. What did they tell you about the conditions of the people?
When I spoke to them, they need immediate help and intensive treatment. And things like nutrition, good nutrition, is things like medical supplies, equipment, most of all, money to help other situations with it. And their hands are very short. They can do their part. That's why we're going to ask our community to involve to try to help in that situation.
How can people in the diaspora help? For instance, today, if I want to send my help, how do I channel that support?
Our organization of WECA, which is the Western Equatorial Community Associations, we are appealing to all Western Equatorians in diaspora and all South Sudanese and all friends of South Sudan to visit our organization website, which is wecausa.org, to make donation to help in that situation. That's the only way I think we can help people who are really in desperate need.
That's Moses Gabriel Dangba, Executive Director of Western Equatorial Community Association in the United States. The group is appealing for donation to help survivors of last week's fuel tanker explosion in Meridi County. To learn more on how to help, visit www.weka.org. Information Minister Michael Makuei says President Salva Kiir will not be attending a meeting at the United Nations later this month to try to strengthen the ongoing peace process. And the reason Makuei says is because Mr. Kiir got the invitation too late. Makui says President Kiir has designated Vice President James Wanyika to represent South Sudan government at the meeting, which was called by the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon.
President Salva Kiir is not going to the United Nations General Assembly meeting because he had already delegated his Vice President James Wanyika to go and attend the General Assembly meeting as scheduled. But last Monday, the President received an invitation letter from the Secretary General of the UN inviting President Salva Kiir to attend side meetings. Of course, the President found it difficult after that. Meanwhile, he had already, all the necessary arrangements were made and the American government was informed, given the list of those who are going there and so forth, for the president now to say, Mr. Vice President, now I'm invited to go and attend the side meetings. You are going to the UN General Assembly meeting is canceled and I'm the one who will be going there. Of course, that is difficult. That is impossible. Not that only. But the fact that the President, His Excellency the President, was given the invitation on such a short notice definitely will not allow other commitments to happen.
Does that mean that President Salva Kiir does not take the meeting at the United Nations very seriously?
The President takes it very seriously, but nevertheless, because of the seriousness of the situation on the ground, more than what is happening in the UN General Assembly meeting, he decided to authorize his Vice President to attend the two meetings.
Can I take it to mean that President Salva Kiir doesn't want to meet with his former Vice President, Riek Machar, who is also coming to the United Nations?
How do we say that he does not want to meet? He has been meeting with him in so many times in Addis Ababa, and he will be ready to meet him anywhere else. The question is the wrong timing in which these two meetings have been scheduled.
There was this meeting in Ethiopia. How is it going in terms of the implementation?
The workshop was called by the IGAD. Of course, the workshop should have started actually on the 5th and continued up to the 7th. But unfortunately, the IGAD failed to call the meeting in time. So at present, we are behind schedule. And this is because the IGAD failed to meet their timing. And yesterday, the delegation that went to the workshop came back yesterday to inform us that the agreement on the implementation of the permanent ceasefire was signed by the government delegation and the former detainees delegation, and the rebels rejected the signing of the agreement. So the ball is now in the court of the IGAD and the rebels.
Was there any reason why the rebels did not sign?
Rebels did not sign for reasons which are not known to us, but known to them. So the best thing is to ask the rebels as to why did they not sign.
That was South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makui speaking with VOA's James Batty yesterday. IGAD monitors in Upper Nile State are accusing government forces of violating South Sudan's shaky ceasefire earlier this month. In a report released last week by the monitoring and verification team based in Malakal, IGAD says government forces used helicopter gunships to attack positions near the Upper Nile State capital that are held by Riek Machar's SPLM in opposition, or SPLM-IO. IGAD says the attacks occurred on September 2nd. It says IGAD ceasefire monitors based in Malakal saw the helicopter gunships flying towards and engaging SPLM-IO forces on the west bank of the Nile. Separately, the report accuses government forces of firing across the Nile at rebel positions and crossing the Nile to attack Machar's troops. IGAD says the monitors also spoke with other eyewitnesses to verify what they saw and were told. IGAD says, quote, "There is no doubt that these attacks took place," end quote. The report notes that the government attacks came after President Kiir and Machar had signed the peace deal brokered by IGAD Plus and after a ceasefire was ratified by both sides. The ceasefire took effect at the end of last month. Before that happened, and before President Kiir signed the IGAD Plus peace deal on August 26, the report says SPLM-IO attacked government-held position south of Bentiu in Unity State. IGAD is urging both sides to abide by the agreement signed last month. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese mobile phone customers complain they are not getting any service. We'll explain why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you like getting attention?
Actually, sometimes I like to draw attention by performing well. I want everyone to know me by my performance, not because I'm beautiful or I'm looking nice or something.
Personally, I don't like attention. One, the more people know you, the more they can even handle you badly. People, they take attention of you, they look at you, the way you are doing things, they will study you, and after, at the end of the day, maybe that guy want to steal from you.
Oh, yes. Every human being like to get attention. Yes, I enjoy when people give me attention.
Yes, I like, because if you get someone's attention, you can express what you want to expose to him.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Mobile phone company Zain Telecommunications say it has lost millions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of customers have been cut off from the network since one of its generators in Lui and Mundri was damaged by gunshots. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from WOW.
The Juba-based company says subscribers in Lakes Western and Northern Bahr el-Ghazali states have been cut off since Wednesday when the generator in Mundri was hit by gunfire during clashes between government forces and youths in the Western Equatoria's Mundri East County. The generator runs the company's main antenna connecting subscribers in those three states. Business people in Awil, WOW, and other towns are complaining that the interruption in service is causing them huge financial losses. Money transfer companies rely entirely on telephone calls and text messages to send and receive money from one destination to another. Marco Dude, manager for the Elephant Money Transfer Company in WOW, says in the last few days, he has lost hundreds of customers due to the service outage.
There are some customers who always send to different branches which are having Zens. So they do send their money last time and they thought that the network will be coming up to now 3 days. So they return their money back. So we are now losing customers.
But Valentino Accord, who works as editor for a money transfer company called YDK, says to keep his business operating, he had to switch to another mobile phone network.
Last 2 days ago, we have got some more problem on Zain side. Actually, from there we shift to Bibasel for such a reason, because the Zain is not working well from other places. For example, like the place where we are operating, then we shift to Bibasel. Instead of using Zain, we ship to Bibasel, then we work to continuous. If not, we ship to the other side due to the network problem.
Internet users are affected too. Freelance journalist James Deng normally accesses internet on his mobile phone. Since the mobile phone network broke down, Deng says he has not been able to send his stories to media houses he works with because he cannot afford the charges at the town's internet cafes.
All the activities that I do here, like writing a story and sending them to the editor, I use Zain modem. And since Zain network had been off for these 2 to 3 days, it actually affected me. I'm unable to send my story to my house media, and other business that I was doing using network are all off.
Wilson Ladu, the Zain network manager in Juba, says he regrets the loss of services to customers.
This for the state is not accessible. Nobody can be able to access internet services. Nobody can be able to even make calls using Zain network.
Dealers in Zain, of a scratch and SIM cards, say they have not been able to earn any money for the past 5 days and want the company to address the problem immediately. Lado says the company engineers are working on it. He says the company plans to install wizard equipment in the affected areas to enable subscribers to access the mobile phone network very soon. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio reporting in WOW.
Nearly a year after President Kiir signed three media bills into law, South Sudan's parliament has approved a list of nominees to sit on a media oversight committee and serve on a public broadcasting corporation. As Ayen Bior reports from Washington, the next step is for lawmakers to vet the nominees.
The 18 nominees are journalists, politicians, and members of the security sector. Their names were sent to the National Assembly nearly 3 months ago by the minister in the office of the president. Lawmakers will now scrutinize the candidates before they give them a final stamp of approval.
Any select committee has been formed to vet, scrutinize the whole documents, then present it to the parliament, finally to pass, and they'll be taken back to the president to issue a decree so that the two bodies can begin operationalization, that is Media Authority and Broadcasting Corporation.
That was Thomas Wani Kundu. He says the vetting committee has 7 days to complete its work.
If they begin with the Broadcasting Corporation, they will then summon the 9 members of the Broadcasting Corporation one by one, putting in front of them the documents of eligibility, the qualification, plus some questions to prove that that person is really competent in that field. If found not competent, then it's recommended how is that this person is not competent.
Information Minister Michael McQuay says his ministry will hand some of its oversight powers to the new media authority.
The media authority is the body that will be in charge of all the media, of the functions and duties and operationalization of the media throughout South Sudan. It will no longer be the Ministry of Information.
The media laws, which President Kiir signed just over a year ago, created the South Sudan Public Broadcasting Corporation, which is tasked with promoting high-quality broadcasting and guaranteeing the free flow of information. One of the laws set up an oversight body, which is supposed to promote an independent, pluralistic media that works in the public interest. And a third media law promised journalists easy access to information. Journalists had hoped the new laws would strengthen their rights and improve working conditions. But as the media laws are finally put into action, many media houses in South Sudan are complaining that their rights are being eroded and the safety of their workers is deteriorating. Several newspapers and private broadcasting companies have been shut down by the government, and journalists have been threatened, harassed, and even killed in the past year. For VOA News, I'm Ayen Bior in Washington.
That report was prepared by Waki Simon Wudu in Juba. The UN House Camp for Internal Displaced Persons in Juba was in festival mood last week as residents celebrated the signing of the IGAD brokered peace agreement. The IDPs are now calling on President Kiir and Machar to get serious about honoring the deal so they can return to their homes and resume their lives. Waki Simon Wudu has the story from Juba.
Women celebrating the peace deal's signing by singing songs at the IDP camp in Juba. Hundreds of women, men and children gathered together to take part in the celebration, which included lots of traditional dances and religious songs advocating for peace. Camp chairperson Peter Gatkwap says people are happy because they believe there will finally be peace in their country. Speaking in Arabic, Gatkwap says all men, women and children are happy because they will get their freedom wherever they live due to the signing of the peace deal by Riek Machar and President Salva Kiir. Another community leader in the camp, James Gallo, says the celebration is also intended to send a message to both sides.
The both parties or the warring parties are aware that the people are suffering in all corners of the South Sudan. So we request them to be honest to the community of South Sudan, to implementing what they agree upon.
President Kiir signed the peace deal on August 26. Machar signed it earlier. At least 100,000 internally displaced persons have been sheltering in UN camps across the country since the conflict began. Tens of thousands of people have been killed and at least 2 million others have been displaced. Gallo believes the compromise agreement contains the solution to restoring peace and stability across the country. But he says until it is implemented, nothing will be accomplished either by the country's leaders or by ordinary people like him who just want to return to their day-to-day lives.
We're expecting that there should be a clear security, that is, a pre-security that will allow me or anybody to go where he wants to go, either to go to the state, to go to the homes. There should be a pre-movement. and even evacuating some of the things that like homes in Juba. We need them to be empty and somebody go free to go where he wants to go.
Gallo hopes implementation of the agreement will fuel more business opportunities and employment that will help improve their economic prospects. Gallo says the international community, including the U.S., should work closely with the two sides to ensure that the agreement is fully implemented.
They should be really monitoring, there should be strong monitoring, there should be a kind of thoroughly, completely evaluation, a clear outcome of what people agree.
And Gallo says there must be accountability for the crimes committed during the conflict by both government forces and the rebels. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of our top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. The former editor of the Citizen newspaper is forming a new political party. The news comes 2 weeks after he quit journalism. Niall Boll, who was forced to close his newspaper by the government and who reportedly received death threats from government agents, has decided the only way to make a real difference in South Sudan's political power is to form his own party. Boll says the decision to form Sawa Sawa, which means equality in Arabic, is not related to the government shutdown of his paper a month ago. He says the peace agreement signed by the leaders of the government and the rebels last month to end 20 months of conflict is what inspired him to form the new party. He says the dialogue needs to be about peace rather than violence. Members of the Western Equatoria diaspora say they are devastated by the fuel tanker explosion that killed nearly 200 people in Mambé Payam last week, and they want to help. The executive director of the Western Equatoria Community Association here in the U.S., Moses Gabriel Dangba, is asking for donations for the survivors. Dangba says they need urgent medical care, food, and shelter. And if you want to help, you can visit www.weca.org. And finally, mobile phone company Zain Telecommunications says it's lost millions of dollars since last week when one of its generators between Mundri and Lui area of Western Equatoria State was damaged by gunshots. Hundreds of thousands of customers have been without power or the network service. The Juba-based company says subscribers in Lakes, Western and Northern Bahar El Ghazal states have been cut off since Wednesday. It happened during clashes between government forces and youth in Western Equatoria's Mundri East County. The generator runs the company's main antenna connecting subscribers in all three states. Business people in Awil, Wau, and other towns are complaining that the interruption in service is causing them huge financial losses. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. And that's the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Binia Juba, Junubia by C.J. Oman.
C.J. Oman. Junubia. Opinia kisinto yafa analiko opinia lonto yafa analiko opinia zei malaika anatukue na tai wataku opinia kemili futukulu junubia
We have been listening to CJ Oman with the song Junubia. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.